This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
And veteran, media critic, and the Mr. News dissector himself, Danny Schechter. I hope I pronounced your name correctly.
Yeah, it's Schechter. Danny Schechter, the news dissector.
A lot of people were inquiring as to who you were, Danny. And I just want to just tell people that Danny Schechter is a graduate of Cornell University. He received his master's degree from the London School of Economics. And you're a Nieman Fellow in Journalism at Harvard University. You taught at Harvard and also Columbia University. You worked at ABC, CNN. You are just a media veteran. And I was looking at your background, and I was just totally impressed. What really impressed me, and I know that it's only we have a short time here, is your documentary a couple of years ago, The Embedded, Weapons of Mass Deception. How the media failed to cover the war in Iraq. I just want to thank you, Danny, for joining us. Mr. News Dissector while working at Boston radio station WBCN, didn't you?
That's where I started with the phrase News Dissector. It's actually somebody laid that on me, and I liked it, so I kept it, you know. And I stayed in radio for 10 years and went into being an on-air correspondent, reporter, producer, and worked with CNN, ABC News, and then co-founded my own company, Global Vision, and have been the editor and the founder of the Media Channel, mediachannel.org. So I've been involved in media for a long time in different incarnations and different types of media. And, you know, today I'm trying to use independent film as a way of raising the issues that are being kind of screened out of our television news operations.
You were talking about screened out. In your documentary, and as I understand it's a book too, Weapons of Mass Deception, you very candidly asserted that Americans were not getting accurate information from embedded journalists.
Well, back in 2003, as the march to war became more pronounced, I embedded myself in my living room, with that powerful tool, the remote control. And I flipped from station to station. I wrote down what I was seeing. I kept a sort of blog of what was actually on the air. What were they saying? What was the political position? And I found out later, you know, of 800 experts on the air in the run-up to the war, only 6 opposed the war. So it was a totally unbalanced presentation with the same message points, the same deceptive statements, which were later unmasked as being totally untrue about WMDs, about Saddam's so-called relationship with Osama bin Laden, et cetera, and so forth. And as I, you know, documented all this, I then put out a book, Embedded Weapons of Mass Deception, and the book bombed. You know, it was the first book out on Iraq, and it got basically ignored by most of the media because I was criticizing them. And because I'm also a filmmaker, I decided, well, let me try to do a film then. And that's when I did WMD, Weapons of Mass Deception. The film was very difficult to fund and support and get out made. It was a big struggle. In the end, though, it did get on the air in 39 countries, which is quite good for an independent film. And it was on the Independent Film Channel, Link TV, Free Speech TV, and other outlets in the United States. And so I was able to sort of get my message out. But more importantly, the New York Times, the Washington Post, some of the people I basically reported on began to apologize for their coverage, in a sense confirming what I said was accurate. I felt it was accurate because I worked inside ABC News for 8 years. I knew how it was done, you know, been there, done that. And as a consequence, I could identify certain techniques that were being used in the packaging, the framing, the presentation of what was on TV to try to make it exciting and the like. And that was what that film was about. And then subsequently, I put out another book called When News Lies, which is also includes the DVD of WMD. And When News Lies really goes further and reports on the reaction I had to my film, how it was being denied at first, dismissed, marginalized, basically treat it as if it didn't exist. And then slowly but surely, a lot of people in the media came around to share my conclusions, which made me feel good, except for one thing. You know, people continued to lose their lives in Iraq in a war we should never have gotten into and are continuing today. I mean, there were 8 American soldiers killed earlier today, and a helicopter was shot down. And, you know, the war is going from bad to worse.
Do you think the Bush administration is complicitly involved with some of our media to not...
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the, you know, Bush administration had this policy, but the media, for the most part, did not challenge it, did not subject it to the test of is this true or not, did not present other narratives, other points of view, and give those points of view real prominence, you know, except, you know, the critique sort of dribbled out piece by piece after the fact, after our troops were already in there. You know, and more recently, media has become more critical, but a lot of it is criticizing the management of the war, not the fact of the war itself. So we've had a situation where, you know, it's easy to say, look, this thing is being run badly, but basically it's the right thing to do. And, you know, I'm saying, no, it's not the right thing to do. It was done, you know, the plan to invade Iraq was before the attack on the World Trade Center, not afterwards, that this was a strategy. And moreover, the attack on Afghanistan is also flawed, which, you know, that seems to be accepted by many Democrats. They say, well, I'm against Iraq, but I'm for Afghanistan. That's like in the war on the mafia, basically advocating, let's bomb Sicily. You know, that's where the mafia is from. Let's just, you know, bomb the people who live there. That didn't solve anything. And, of course, the war in Afghanistan has not been won by a long shot. And Osama bin Laden, the guy who we were going to smoke out of the caves, is still alive and well and plotting against us.
Well, I'm curious, what is the role of the media? That's what I'd like to know. You were talking about that, you know, the media should have criticized, should have challenged. Is that their role? Or is their role more passive, you know, just to basically tell what's going on?
You know, under the terms of our Constitution, the media uniquely was given a constitutional protection in the First Amendment. In other words, freedom of the press was put in there basically because the founders believed that we needed a sort of checks and balances system, that we needed an independent fourth estate to monitor and to be a watchdog on the affairs of government. So media was given almost unprecedented power and authority. Even when it's wrong, you know, they claim it's the First Amendment. They have a right, you know, to say what they want to say, et cetera, and so forth. But they also have a duty to be that watchdog. And what's happened, unfortunately, is that the Fourth Estate, in the words of Tommy Sands, you know, the director of the war, the chief commander of the war, he basically said the media is really the fourth front of the war, not a fourth estate on the war, but part of the war itself. And a lot of media people went along with that, unfortunately. And so we're in a situation today where it's still very difficult to get accurate information about what's happening, about the casualties, the Iraqi casualties. We just focus on the American casualties. We never see them when they come back. The conditions in our veterans' hospitals only made news when there was a big protest, you know, by some of the soldiers there who were just fed up of being mistreated. You know, at the same time, the administration was talking about support our troops, this and that. You know, our troops who had been wounded, you know, were being not supported. They were getting terrible care and still are in many cases. So, you know, we have a situation that's a very deceptive, and it's not just really about the war, unfortunately. And that's what I've tried to bring out in my new film, In Debt We Trust, which is about the debt crisis in America, which is also not being reported very well. You know, we have 2 million Americans facing foreclosure from their homes. 2 million. That's more than the people who lost their homes in Katrina, okay? And,
yes,
you know, this is a disaster that's happening before our eyes, and nobody's doing anything about it. I just read today that the mortgage industry spent $200 million lobbying the Congress of the United States to get favorable legislation to prevent them from really investigating, you know, what's happened. This is, you know, criminal because so many people are losing their homes and are in hock up to their eyeballs, have very hard time trying to pay their bills, and are struggling. And meanwhile, the banks, the financial institutions, have never been doing better.
Well, Daddy, how do you respond to the criticism, perhaps by a potential opponent, or even in fact an opponent, who would argue, well, aren't you placing too much responsibility on the media? You want the media to talk about the war. You want the media to talk about the mortgage situation. You want the media to talk about the debt. You want the media to talk about Katrina. How much responsibility does the media have?
Well, here's the point. You know, having worked inside media, having studied media, having taught about media, having interacted with journalists, you know, who I've admired, learning from Edward R. Murrow as a kid, knowing Walter Cronkite, you know, various people who took their responsibilities seriously, who believed they had a duty to inform the American public. Many of them worked in corporate environments that made it difficult sometimes to do that. And there were often clashes with their bosses, with their companies, who basically were in, basically were doing the business of the, you know, of the advertisers more than the business of journalism. But nevertheless, there's always been this tension. And many journalists believe very strongly that they have a mission, that it's not just about money. It's not just about Paris Hilton stories that are distractions and meaningless. It's about trying to really report on what's happening in our country and to our country. And unfortunately, many times journalists can't do that. They can't do it because they're not given enough airtime. They're not given enough space in the newspapers. The investigative reporting has been cut way back. The owners, people who control media, have become concentrated. 20 years ago, there were 50 companies running the media. Today, there are about five. You know,
yes,
there's been a merger
yes.
of news business and show
yes.
business, so that showbiz values are driving a lot of our news presentation. I mean, what we're seeing is the sort of dumbing down of the American people, so people don't know what's happening. You know, 69% of our high school seniors can't find Iraq on a map, according to a National Geographic survey. I mean, that's pretty shocking, and our media is not doing the job it could be doing to contextualize information, give background, help us understand these things. Now, you're asking me, well, can they really do all of these things? Not the way it's going, not the way the direction it's moving in, because the budgets are being cut. And a lot of times they're looking for the prettiest hair on the air, not somebody who has something to say. They want more selling than telling. And, you know, if you look at local news in America, it's a joke for the most part, okay? It's supposed to be a half hour. It's actually 20 minutes. It's actually, you know, kind of cops and predator, criminal, you know, busts of people who are committing crimes and the like. I mean, it has nothing to do with news. It has everything to do with getting the audience to stick around for the next commercial, okay?
So it seems like this is more of newstainment or entertainment.
Well,
I'd like to know... You mentioned in one of the interviews you've done in the past, you said we are now in the age of global broadcasting, and I would like to ask you some poignant questions. What from the major sources of news, such as ABC, CBS, and et cetera, which ones would you recommend that we rely upon more so than the other?
Well, you know. In the course of the work I did, I joined media to try to spotlight the problems of the world. I came to see that the media was one of the problems of the world. And so I try to write about that, and I've written 8 books. One of them is The More You Watch, The Less You Know, that sort of sums up how I feel. I created with my partner, Rory O'Connor, MediaChannel.org, which is a online network, a media watchdog site. I write a blog every day. We feature reporting and news about the media. We feature critiques of the media, you know, every single day. So we're trying to make the media more accountable, more transparent, more accurate, if at all possible. And we're trying to do this by combining the talents of journalists from all over the world who've been writing about. So my conclusion is you can't rely on any one source. Just like, for example, if you are concerned about your diet or what you eat, you know, if you just survived on Kentucky Fried Chicken, you probably wouldn't make it for too long, you know, I mean, because...
So don't rely upon any one source.
It's unhealthy. Yeah, you have to choose and become your own editor and critique what you're reading. Be critical. Look at it carefully. Compare and contrast. I mean, for example, the whole world today now has one station called Al Jazeera in English, okay? Al Jazeera is the Middle East-based network, okay? And they can get in every country in the world but us. The freest nation in the world. It's hard to see Al Jazeera. You've got to look at it on YouTube if you want to know what they're reporting. And in many cases, they're reporting about the war and about other issues in the Middle East particularly and around the world in developing countries is much more accurate and much more interesting than what we're getting in our diet of what's called news from the network.
I like your
own cable stations.
It's a diet. And you also talked about just eating, just relying upon, chicken. And, well, you know, certain foods we would not eat because it would actually kill or harm us, wouldn't? You know, for instance, we don't eat acid, for instance. What media, what sources of news, such as ABC, BBC, Al Jazeera, et cetera, would you tell us would be just as harmful to our psyche as it would be harmful to our body if we, say, consumed acid?
Media is harmful. Can be harmful, can be enlightening. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of violence. You know, if you go to, you know, a movie channel, it's filled with violent fare. And that, you know, even this guy who was the terrible, disturbed young man who was, you know, shooting up Virginia Tech University, he was modeling himself on a movie he had seen in South Korea, a violent film. So, you know, the images that we carry around in our heads often affect, sometimes infect, our outlook. You know, we end up today relying on impressions of things, not real information. In other words, we have opinions, but when we're asked, what's the basis of your opinion? Most people can't really talk about that too knowingly. You know, they basically, rely on a very limited number of sources, even on the Internet, you know. With all the different sources that are available on the Internet, people go to familiar brands, MSNBC, AOL, et cetera, and so forth. And they don't seek out other sources that are there that are fascinating, that often have a very different, what we call a narrative, a different perspective than we would, have. If we weren't just relying on these main news sources. So I think one of the things we have to do in America is diversify our news information. We have to teach media literacy in our schools so kids know that there are options, there are alternatives, there are other ways of understanding the world. I mean, when I was a high school student, when I left high school, I grew up in the Bronx. I grew up in a housing project, but it was, mostly all-white community, working-class people. And then I got involved in the civil rights movement. Suddenly I saw the world that there was another experience of people were having in the world.
Speaking of which, you have done a lot of work with Ozzie Davis, Ruby Dee, Danny Glover. You have been a champion for not civil rights, but human rights.
Well, thank you. And we did a human rights series on the Global Vision, my company. And you know what we were told by PBS? We were told human rights is an insufficient organizing principle for a TV series. So what would be a proper organizing principle? Cooking. That would be okay. But human rights, and we had then our anchor woman, Charlene Hunter Gault, one of the top African-American journalists in the world, who later went on to be CNN's bureau chief in South Africa. PBS rejected what we were doing. We had to go station by station to try to get this series on the air. We were successful in getting it on the air. People liked it. We were on the air for four years.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
That's utterly amazing that you told me that. I would never thought PBS would do such a thing.
Yeah, but we're in a situation where a lot of things that we assume are often not, true, or we have a perception. This is that trumps reality. We perceive like PBS is the liberal network, but it's not. If you really look at the content, it hasn't changed much in 25 years. That doesn't mean there aren't good documentaries. Bill Moyers has finally gotten back on the air with a good series. Yes, there is some good stuff on the air. I don't say it's all of it, but I think that you must If you want to know the truth, you have to be a truth seeker. You have to be willing to look widely. You
have to be able to assimilate a lot of information and be able to critically think about that information and value it logically. You know, let me just say this. This is People Speak. We're speaking with Danny Schechter. Danny, of course, and many people already know, Danny of course, wrote the weapon. Well, you wrote and also produced the film, Weapons of Mass Deception, How the Media Failed to Cover the War in
Iraq. For those people who are listening, can I just give a couple of URLs or websites maybe they could check out if they want to know more?
Absolutely.
Okay, because there's WMDthefilm.com. WMDthefilm.com is about this movie we've been talking about. InDebtWeTrust.com is about the movie I've just done about the debt crisis in America and how that's impacting on people all over our country. So that's another film. And then I edit MediaChannel.org, which is a website where you can read my blog, News Dissector blog, and read about what's actually happening in and to the media. So, you know, there's a lot of different sources for information that we're offering, that we're trying to offer anyway.
And it's WMDthefilm.com. You have www.indebtwetrust.com.
Also,
MediaChannel.org. Danny, I'd like to, if you don't mind, there are a couple people in a virtual auditorium who would like to ask you a couple of questions. And one of our premier...
Yeah, happy to.
Persons who's in the virtual auditorium is Gary. He would like to ask you a question. So, Gary, if you could please come to the mic, ask your question of Danny.
Yeah.
Are you there, Gary?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, here he is.
Thank you, Malik. Hello, Danny Schechter of the News Dissector. It's your buddy Gary Baumgarten here, and we still want Media Channel to come on Pal Talk. We've got to get back together to talk about that. But I didn't come on to ambush you. I wanted to suggest that, with apologies to Shakespeare, the people are the media.
Hard for me to hear what he's saying. If you can recap
these large conglomerates that run the media these days, they obviously are in business to make money. They have fiduciary responsibilities to their investors and shareholders. And so long as we flock with large numbers to watch the Lindsay Lohan stories, the other day, watch three simultaneous police chases in the L.A. area on a triple split screen on CNN headline news, Ted Turner's got to be pulling his hair out for what happened to the network that he established. We're not going to change the mainstream media, are we?
Well, I think the media is changing. First of all, it's changing because people are turning away from reading newspapers. Many young people are. It's changing because the news programs on the networks are not getting the ratings they once did. People are rejecting all of that. It's changing because there's been a lot of criticism of the media. When people are asked about it, they're very critical of it. They're really frustrated. Instead of admiring it, they lampoon it. So you have public opinion turning against exploitative types of media. That's new in our country. Now we also have new media that's emerged, which is various websites, bloggers, 70 million bloggers in the world, other sources of information that are available now that were never available before. So that's competition to the mainstream media system, and they're trying to respond to that. You know, Rupert Murdoch bought MySpace. They're trying to get into digital media, but there's also a lot of other sources of information out there that people can turn to, and I think it's worth doing. So I would say to you, yes, the situation is in some ways worse than ever because of media concentration, because of control at the top by all these guys. On the other hand, it's better than ever because for the first time, if you seek it out, you can find a lot of information that would be very enlightening to you.
Thank you, Gary. I certainly appreciate that. We have a next speaker in the virtual auditorium, Mary. Mary from California. Please come up and ask Danny a quick question. Mary, are you there? Okay, let's go with the next. Oh, Mary Stoop. Okay, go ahead, Mary.
Hi, Hi. Sorry about that. I was hitting a brick wall. I have a question regarding something you said earlier about there were other reasons than selling the war for our media being embedded. And I'm asking you this because it's something I've come to, it's a conclusion I've come to on my own, and I was wondering if you could validate that, perhaps, or refute it. My question is, could the reason why this happened, or could one of the reasons be that what our media is so behind in ratings, that one of the things that they are doing is trying to, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to come back, and I apologize, but my son and I are fighting over the TV. I apologize.
Okay. That's all right, Mary. We'll go ahead with the next person in the virtual auditorium, Henry. Henry, please come up to the mic and ask Danny a very quick question.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Malik, or as we know you, Lord Merciful Vu. Mr. Schechter, what is your opinion of such journalists, true journalists, in mainstream media such as Keith Olbermann and Jack Cafferty and Lou Dobbs? I know that they are sort of the lone liberal voices.
I would say that journalists often evolve in doing their job. Keith Olbermann started out as a sports journalist, primarily. Okay, that's what he was kind of good at. He wrote a book about sports, you know, when he was in high school, about baseball. He's an expert on that. But he gradually got more political and more aware of what was going on. Lou Dobbs, I worked with him when I worked at CNN back in 1980. He was a great financial journalist, but he began to get frustrated on just reporting on information. He felt he had a point of view, a perspective that he wanted to share, and it's a pretty popular and controversial one. And I admire him for that. Jack Cafferty, a very good writer, a thoughtful person, and quite willing to offer critiques and criticisms, which makes him more popular than other people who have been on that program before. So in a way, by being distinctive, by saying what you really think, by, you know, speaking up and speaking out, audiences tend to respect you or they don't like you. I mean, in some cases, it's very controversial when you take a very strong point of view. The Fox people on Fox do it, and they have people who hate them, you know, and they also have people who just listen to everything they say, becoming, you know, in the Rush Limbaugh sense, ditto heads. Yes, I agree, I agree, I agree. They don't have any other information to challenge them with. I think we need more diversity, and I'm glad to see that there is some in the American media system. But there's also independent media, which you should check out. The Amy Goodman program, for example, is one of them. Democracy Now!, the Link TV, offering very good documentaries. Free Speech TV, doing the same. You don't only have to look at mainstream media. You can also look at independent media.
Excellent. BBS Radio.
There you go. And this program here. I mean, look, you're having me on the air. I really appreciate that.
I really appreciate your being here. I'm learning a lot. We have a next caller. Well, actually, a person in the virtual auditorium. George from New York. George, please come up to the mic and answer and ask Danny a very short question.
Hey, Dan, thanks for taking your time to answer some of our questions. I want to know what your viewpoint is on military blogs, on soldiers blogging and sharing their everyday experiences and so forth, and the latest bust down from the higher chain of command, the generals and so forth, busting down on that and so forth, not infringing their right to speak, but cutting down their blogging. I understand about OPSEC and so forth, but what's your viewpoint on that?
Thank you, George.
I really didn't hear what George said. It was hard for me to hear. Can you recap it for me?
As I understood, George was asking about what you thought about the blogging and the situation with blogging in general. You're a big you blog a lot, right, Danny?
I blog every day, maybe 3,000 words a day. So
yeah,
I'm a blogger,
about two,
you know, because I can offer what I call a counter-narrative, another perspective every day on the news, offering information, sources, links that you wouldn't ordinarily get in the mainstream media. And so I'm able, by reading widely and by things that readers send me, to basically offer another point of view on things or another way of looking at the world, which, you know, I offer up, honestly, as my perspective, as the news dissector perspective. I don't necessarily say it's the truth, but I'd like to think that the people who are trying to find the truth will also be open to other points of view.
Well, he was also, the George from New York was also discussing about military blogging and it being suppressed, and I don't know if it has,
well,
in fact, been suppressed.
Yeah, there has been an attempt to crack down on it. And, you know,
oh, really?
This is typical of what this administration is doing, which is trying to control the information flow, to only, promote points of view and reporting that agrees with what they're doing. That was what the embedded reporting was set out to do. By getting journalists in the units, they become sympathetic to the people they report on. Some of them, you know, reported information that the government didn't want reported, but most of them didn't. Most of them basically gave the flavor of the war. But, you know, war has more than one side to it, and if you're only getting one side, it's not surprising that you're not going to get all the facts.
And speaking about the military, you coined the term milli-entertainment or milli-tainment.
Yeah, milli-tainment. Actually,
well, what is that?
It was actually Time magazine that used that phrase. Basically,
oh,
that the war was presented as an entertainment spectacle. Lots of bombs going off in the background, a big heightened sense of danger and threat. You know, will we be bombed by Saddam? Basically creating a almost like a wrestling
drama?
Match. You know, the U.S., like a dramatic, right, impact. The U.S. standing for good and you know, in the American way, you know, and Saddam standing for evil, you know, evil doing and Islamic insanity. You know, and so can we free these people and restore democracy to Iraq? And, you know, you can see that it's not really going too well in judging by what's happening.
Wow. We have another individual in the virtual auditorium, Judith. Judith? From South Dakota. Please come up and ask Danny a very brief question.
Yes, sir. I'd like to know what media, you know, they talk about the media and these blogs. What makes one media source superior to the other? In other words, the conservative or the liberal, what makes one think that they're better than the other? That's all. Okay.
Thank you, Judith.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that, too.
She inquired as to what makes one particular source of media superior to another.
Well, I mean, I think if you know something about a story, if you've ever gone somewhere and seen something happen in front of you, and then gone home and watched it on TV, it's often a totally different version of what you saw. So a lot of it has to do with your own judgment, your own background. How much do you know about a particular issue? Because often media bias is not, you know, direct commission, it's omission. It's what they leave out that often influences what's going on. So, you know,
leaving out things is a form of lying, isn't it?
Well, it's a form of selection. You know, you can't cover everything. You select what's most important to you, but sometimes in doing that, you can omit very important information that helps an audience understand with what's going on.
Right, but omitting material facts, isn't that a form of misrepresentation?
It can be, and sometimes it really is. And I think, it's very worrisome when you have, such selectivity that, in fact, often reinforces a point of view that the government wants reinforced and eliminates information or analysis that the government doesn't want covered. Then we have a situation of manipulation and control, and this is what we, you know, fought for many years ago. You know, the communist governments of Soviet Union, you know, they were bad because it was controlled by the government, you know, and we're in danger of that happening again sometimes. I mean, this is not to say that we are the same as what the communist government was. Obviously, we're not. There is more room for different points of view here. But at the same time, when you look at, you know, at the beginning, you know, a majority of Americans were against the war, okay? Then because after the whole propaganda barrage started, majority of Americans were for the war. Today, you know, depending on what polls you read, support for Bush and the war, you know, down to like 29%, one of the lowest ever, you know, for a standing president at a time of war. So public opinion has shifted as other information has come out to challenge the point of view that the government has been presenting.
Yeah, I was posed a question in PM. What are your thoughts on Robert Fisk's Great War for Civilization?
Well, you know, Robert Fisk, I was at the launch of his book in London. He's a very impressive, very erudite, very thoughtful writer. He's lived in Beirut and in the Middle East, you know, for 25 years, has traveled widely, knows the leaders, has spoken to most of them. He has what you call, you know, context and credibility, because a lot of what he writes is filtered through, you know, a lived experience of actually being there. And he's a very important journalist. He writes for an English newspaper, but he gets picked up a lot in the internet, various websites, because people respect what he's saying. Instead we have somebody like a Thomas Friedman at the New York Times, who is not well respected around the world.
Thank you. We have another person from the virtual auditorium, Mary. Mary is again back from California. Mary, please come up and ask your question of Danny, please.
Hi, it's me again, and I apologize for earlier. My question is, which you pretty much answered, or alluded to it. So you're saying that this could also be used as a way to manipulate the American public about certain presidential candidates as well. In other words, I've seen the last two elections especially, where the media has backed specific candidates, and it seems that once they do, we find out all these other things about them, and things that we could have known prior to the election itself that could have made a big difference in how people voted.
I'm
not talking
about
that.
Was more reliable and more trustworthy. The problem is, like in our politics,
they could have been
most candidates
all
rely
this time
on political
just
advertising,
to sell that air
which is very manipulative, which
space,
is their point
cetera.
Of view. And when the networks are not presenting more in-depth reporting on what's happening, people can be very swayed by these extremely manipulative political commercials, which, you know, basically leave out a lot about what the candidates have done or all the contradictions, et cetera, and so forth. You know, particularly at the local level and the state level, where there's less and less reporting on politics. Most of it is about the presidential sweepstakes and the big name candidates, and the other candidates don't really get much of a chance to be heard.
I think that it's a very poignant question. It's a very important question, actually, because I have noticed that as well. We find out more information after the fact, after we voted. We have another person in the virtual auditorium, a Scott from Canada. Scott, please come up, ask Danny a question, please, very briefly.
Yes, my question is on the Jon Stewart Show and the phenomenon of people actually watching the Jon Stewart Show to actually get news in context. And what's your opinion on that?
Thank you, Scott. Are you there, Danny?
Again, I didn't really hear the question. I'm sorry to say. Some reason I'm not getting it.
I would like for Scott to ask that question again, because it's really, really a good question. Scott, if you don't mind, could you come back and ask that question?
Can you recap it for me? Because I couldn't really hear him.
The question was basically about the Jon Stewart Show and people actually going to watch a comedy show to get the news in context.
All right, I'm sorry.
Did you get that question, Danny?
Could you translate that for me, please?
He was talking about the Jon Stewart Show. Apparently, people were going to that particular show to get the news in context.
Well, you know, there you go. I mean, Jon Stewart is very talented. He's funny. He's entertaining.
Yeah,
and he has a big audience, but he's not a journalist, and he doesn't claim to be a journalist. And you know, the curious thing is that a lot of kids can't distinguish, in some cases, between, you know, comedy and reality, between fiction and faction. You know, this is one of the problems we have, where people often see things on TV that they think was a real thing, you know, but it wasn't, you know. And so this is why it's important to have balanced and accurate journalism. That's why it's important to have more in-depth documentaries from different perspectives. I mean, you know, I just was reading on AOL here, somebody attacking my film In Debt We Trust, saying that it's you know, not very entertaining. That's the criticism, okay?
Well, Daddy, what is your definition of a journalist?
Well, you know, somebody who's, a truth seeker is trying to get the facts, trying to find out what's really going on, and whatever his beat or her beat is, whatever they're covering, to try to really dig a little deeper. That's what a journalist is. Somebody who's a stenographer is somebody who just reports President Bush said today X, Y, and Z. That's not journalism. That's stenography. So,
okay, well,
you know,
what's the difference?
Well, the difference is that as a journalist, you're bringing your experience, your questions, your knowledge, your depth about a subject, and you're trying to offer more incisive information. But that doesn't mean you only have to cover one point of view. You can cover a number of points of view. The problem is we tend to think there are two sides to every story when a lot of stories have more than two sides. And so that's what we're trying to find out. So, I'm going to have to leave you because I'm writing my blog, and I have to have it posted in an hour. But I'm really happy to be on. I'd be happy to come back. I really admire what you're doing, and I think it's really
important. You have to come back, Mr. News Dissector.
I'll be happy to listen to you. Let me just give you my email in case anybody has a question but they didn't get it in. They can write to me at danny@mediachannel.org, and I'll respond to them, okay?
And also, you have newsdissector.org. You have
WMD, that's the website, but if they write to me, I'll try to respond, okay? Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, Danny.
It's really exciting. You're doing a really interesting show. Okay. Bye-bye now.
Thanks, Bud, and thanks for being with us. Well, there you have it, friends, Danny. By the way, I want to recite his websites as well for him. News that he had to go, of course, newsdissector.org. Please go there. I went there today. Mediachannel.org. And indebtwetrust.com. Please go there, friends. Thanks for joining.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the big wall, by the relief of the fast, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry. And I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island.